clear and concise. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
An international intelligence operation. That is truly what I believe 9/11 to be. And it was really at the point where globalism was ready to take that next step on so many levels. And what do I mean by that? Well, I would be remiss if after a segment like that, I did not discuss what I found when I investigated 9/11. Now, this is also kind of an origin story of an independent journalist, somebody that was looking at all of the available information, whether it be the white papers, whether it be what we saw on the news that day, radio interviews, policies that were enacted, but also eyewitnesses. They are so, so important. You need to take that opportunity to reach out either by the phone, hit that email, even in the early 2000s, and what? Get on the road and get in people's faces and ask them questions. Some people are going to be willing to talk to you. Some people are not. I can't tell you the multitude of interviews we did for Loose Change that hit the cutting room floor and were in none of the versions of the film. For instance, April Gallup was somebody that we interviewed for some time, spent some time with, and for those that do not know who she escaped the entry wound of the Pentagon with her young son, who was in daycare at that time. And they escaped with little to no injuries whatsoever going through that hole. Think about that for a second, prior to the collapse of the building. Unfortunately, we were not able to include April in the video. The Shinky brothers are another couple of brothers that were working at gas stations where video was confiscated before they were able to look at it, and they gave their eyewitness account. So really, even then, you could do these things, and even then, big tech was on their way to, if they couldn't censor us, smear us. Let me give you some examples. So as Loose Change was going viral, things like Wikipedia, which is America's dictionary, completely and totally banned all of us. And the only reference to Loose Change, it's a conspiracy theory film. At one point, I had my own wiki with a ton of different bullet points as to the work that we were doing, gone. They did not want to legitimize us. And when I look at the attacks themselves, there's reason that I did a follow-up to Loose Change, because Loose Change, although it did hit on other aspects, was very much an investigation into the physical anomalies that we were seeing via the planes, via the buildings, and via the attacks, with kind of a backstory. Well, I always told people the backstory was actually much worse. So that's why I decided to make Fabled Enemies, by the way. Both films are free of charge right now on any playlist you find this guy's ugly mug on. So whether it is Rockfin, Rumble, or YouTube, you can still see all these movies free. But especially in that film, I pointed out that we were in a situation where an international intelligence cartel had caused these attacks. So in other words, you had role players in Israel for sure. When you're looking at those Israeli role players, there was a network of spies in this country that had infiltrated a multitude of organizations all across the country. Now, a lot of people call them art students. And yes, some of them were in fact art students, but less talked about are the ones that were at malls in kiosks. Remember when you used to go through the mall and the guy had that crazy helicopter that would fly up to the second level and come back down? A lot of those were Israeli fronts. Okay, and these individuals were mirroring a lot of the hijackers themselves. Some of them, yes, were funded from Saudi Arabia. Others got money from the Pakistani intelligence networks. But when you had individuals blowing the whistle and warning not just local law enforcement, but Deborah Albrighton actually called the CIA on her neighbor, Waleed Al-Shaari, prior to the acts, being like, hey, something's wrong here. I think we got some terrorists living next door. No, not going to do anything about that. And then you find out a couple of the hijackers are living with and renting from an FBI informant with CIA connections. There were some headlines about that a couple of years back, but people like Richard Clark have been talking about it for some time. Folks, that scratches the surface. Check out the films, and you can do that. If you're following TNT Radio on social media, they tag me sometimes. You'll find Jason Burmis on social media too. You'll find links to all this stuff, and you'll be able to share those links. So please give us a follow across the board. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Getter, and Gab. And like I've said before, we can't do this without your financial support. So please consider that donation. Back with the headlines and Adam Ruckus after this.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, the ATF, has submitted the final version of controversial rule that closes the so-called gun show loophole by simply redefining what it means to be engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. What do you got for us?
Some sad news for gun owners in America. Wow, this is something they've been wanting to do for a long time, is to close this so-called loophole, as they describe it, because they feel people who are selling firearms online at gun shows and other informal venues, one-on-one, for example, you shouldn't be doing that without a background check, should you? Oh, gosh, no. That's terrible. How dare you? So it's that kind of a thing. So they have been trying to implement a new change, and it looks as though they have succeeded. According to the U.S. Attorney General, this change, required by the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, enacted on June 25th, 2022, will save lives by requiring anyone who, quote, devotes time, attention, and labor to dealing in firearms as a regular course or trade or business, or predominantly earns a profit through the repetitive purchase and sale of firearms, end quote, to obtain an FFL, a federal firearms license. Attorney General Merrick Garland wrote in a statement on the ATF's website, quote, under this regulation, it will not matter if guns are sold on the internet, at a gun show, or at a brick and mortar store. If you sell guns predominantly to earn a profit, you must be licensed and you must conduct background checks, end quote. Critics of the change have said the rule will effectively end private transactions, possibly including the inheritance of firearms within one's own families. According to the statement from the ATF, El Presidente Jose Biden issued executive order. Oh, there's an executive order again. 14092 on March 14th, 2023, which directed Mr. Garland to clarify the definition of who is engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. The plan immediately drew criticism from gun rights activists. I'm going to quote here from Representative Bob Good, Republican from Virginia, who wrote in a letter to ATF Director Steen Dettelbeck on December 7th, 2023, the following, quote, the ATF is using the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act to substantially revise all regulations governing who and what constitutes a quote-unquote dealer and how such dealers may conduct business. This proposal advances a radical left-wing agenda that will undermine the Second Amendment and the constitutional rights of all Americans, end quote. Mr. Garland signed the new rule yesterday, April 10th, and it will become effective May 10th, 2024. According to the 406-page rule, the only requirement for determining whether a person is engaged in the business of selling guns is whether or not the person is trading to, quote, predominantly earn a profit, end quote, rather than to earn a, quote, unquote, livelihood. Critics claim that under the new rule, the transfer of a single gun between private citizens would require the seller to have an FFL and to perform a check through the National Criminal Instant Background Check System. Aiden Johnston, Director of Federal Affairs for Gun Owners of America, put out a statement to various media outlets. This one is from the Epoch Times. Quote, once again, the Biden administration is weaponizing every tool in their toolbox to intimidate, harass, and criminalize gun owners with unlawful executive actions. This backdoor universal registration check rule is nothing more than a move to criminalize the sale of a single gun without a background check, end quote. So forth and so on. So we have this easily being spun on both sides, Jason. People who are for more gun control are jumping for joy, and people who believe in their Second Amendment right and the Constitution are crying foul. Count me in that latter category, my friend, but what say you?
Shall not be infringed, sir. That's what I have to say. Look, I'm not a gun guy. I'll be very, very honest with you. You know, I watched Bambi as a kid. Yes, I think deer are delicious. I've even been on some hunts putting them out. I probably couldn't pull that trigger. I know I couldn't skin that buck after the fact, but the Second Amendment isn't there for hunting, broski. No, no, no. It is there to ensure that we have a First Amendment, actually, that we have freedom of thought and speech, that we have property rights, that we live under a constitutional republic. And a key element in that is not just a well-informed populace, but a well-armed populace as well. And really the most egregious thing about this bill is the fact that they are going to start going after those that have collections of firearms and simply want to pass those collections on to loved ones, whether it be their sons, their daughters, their friends, their families. That should not be an issue, but that's just what they're going for, under the guise of what? Some kind of protection. Let me ask you, do you think that this is going to stop criminals from selling guns to one another? Is this going to stop the black market of the vast majority of guns that are actually used in criminal behavior? The answer is very simple. No, of course it's not. And that's the thing with these people. They have to use executive power because despite how bad it is through the various means and levers, they are unable to get real legislation passed in this manner. Why? Because it's ridiculous. It's crazy. It's wrong. It's not proven by any means to lower crime. Again, the vast majority of the people that they're targeting are law-abiding citizens. Many of them do register their weapons. And guess what? They also practice with their firearms. In other words, they're not holding them sideways like this while they're jacking your iPhone at them. But hey, I'm just a dumb beauty school dropout. What do I know? The liberals will tell me, not much.
You know, speaking from personal experience, because I was raised very pro MacGyver, that was actually one of my all-time favorite shows. And that was a lot of brainwashing propaganda against guns hidden throughout. Well, not so hidden throughout, but on its surface, that was a big deal there. So I grew up afraid of guns other than, you know, messing around with a little 22 and a BB gun and stuff when I was a teenager doing the hunting stuff. That's fine. But I was like kind of liberal for most of my adult life and didn't believe I needed to keep a gun until I finally decided and realized that my life was in danger because police officers could not come save me when I need them to. You might notice there's a big scar on my face. Yeah, that's thanks to a criminal. If I had been able to defend myself, I might have avoided all of that and losing my teeth and the trauma associated with that. But yeah, since I have become a proud gun owner very recently in the past 5 years and learned how to safely operate it, I feel empowered and safe and protected. And yeah, I understand what it's about. It's about, you know, our rights. We have the right to do that and to defend ourselves against, you know, criminals as well as a tyrannical government if need be, Jason.
Absolutely. And the MacGyver life lessons are some that we can still use today. Who needs a firearm when you have a pen cap and a book of matches? I mean, that's it. That's all you need if you're MacGyver. You can take down an entire cartel with just these two tools if you're watching the television. I'm being facetious, but guys, you watch that show, that's every other episode. I'm just letting you know. Adam Clark, we'll see you tomorrow, end of the week. Man, the week flies by here at Today's News Talk. We're going to be talking NATO on the other side of this. Trumpsky and Hutch meeting with former UK Prime Minister David Cameron. Really interesting story there. You're not going to want to miss it. And is this really a precursor to the fact that it appears that Trump is going to be returning to power. You're having more and more people in the political arena of note talking about Trump as if it's a foregone conclusion. Now, again, I'm not sure we're there. I'm not sure we're going to have free and fair elections, but it is worth noting what this discussion was about. And of course, Trump has all sorts of tools in his toolbox to point out the absurdity of the policies, including the ones we just discussed with Adam Clark, and why we should not be having them, and why he will be overturning them. We're going to hit a quick break back after this with more Today's News Talk, TNTRadio.live.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. TheLightPaper.co.uk.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are now joined by Richard Lyons. He is the author of The DNA of Democracy and The Shadows of Acropolis series. Thank you so much for joining us, Richard. Now, I've interviewed you on my other show before, but this is the first time on Today's News Talk. So give the people a little background on yourself and why you decided to write The Shadows of Acropolis series.
That's a big question, but it's I grew up in printing and publishing and in education and special ed, and also in religious education. That's my background. And at a point in our life, I'm from a family of nine kids, and so we all wanted to pursue different things. So the family business broke up, and I decided to be an indie publisher and a writer. And like a lot of people in your audience, Jason, a number of years ago, I began wondering what had happened to our country, why it was that we had administrative state agencies attacking people like the Tea Party movement, or the HHS suing the Little Sisters of the Poor or finding them out of existence. And that it alarmed me. How was this happening in America? How were persons in the press being spied upon for writing stories that the administration didn't agree with? So in order to do that, I had to go back in time to how what the basics are of a democracy. What are the basics of having common rights? What are the basics of a constitutional republic? So that is all entailed in the DNA of democracy. It's the how and why our country was created as it was. And that takes us up to about 1900. It goes through the women's suffragette movement. And then you have a story of a different kind. That's the Shadows of the Acropolis. And what that's about, Jason, is how our government changed to being what it is today. It's been changing for 100 years as power that used to be powers left to the individual, powers left to the family, powers left to local government, state government, enterprises. All these powers have been gathered into one city in our country as power has accumulated in Washington, D.C., at the expense of states, localities, individuals, associations. And that's when we, what was alarming is when I found that such associations were being attacked as the Tea Party movement. The state of Arizona was attacked for trying to protect its own people against an invasion from Mexico. If that sounds familiar, it is, but that was 10 years ago, 12 years ago. So it's the same thing. There's too much power in Washington. The people of this country are not being represented as they used to be. And the power being assumed by the administrative state, a branch of government that was never even prophesied in our Constitution. has most of the power in our government.
So let's talk about that, because I talk about the executive within the executive a lot. And I believe that that really was fortified post-World War II, where we took the model of the Manhattan Project and you had these tiers of classification that went to born classified. At the same time, there was so much compartmentalization, most people did not know what they were working on. And eventually, through black sites and these three-letter agencies, you'd see the Central Intelligence Agency come out of the OSS. You saw the power of the FBI rise. You had this inner, what is now known as the deep state, that is really outside of the purview of the presidency. And we were warned about this via somebody who was very much on the inside of that during World War II, President Eisenhower. You know, there was a guy that was boots on the ground, had seen not only the scourge of war, but globalism up front. And by the end of his tenure, he was very concerned with the erection of kind of this superstructure that was outside of our constitutional republic. Can you kind of speak to that?
Exactly. That forms a major part of Shadows of the Acropolis. And you put it brilliantly, Jason, but there's one thing you left out. Right after World War II, we won those wars and showed such of the goodness of government when at war that people trusted the government with more power. Right? Nobody questioned the government after World War II because, my gosh, we just defeated tyranny on two sides of the earth. So there was an implicit and explicit trust in government. Now, what Dwight Eisenhower rightly warned about was a concentration of power, of massive budgets, of millions of personnel in an area of government that was untouchable. It was in the Department of Defense. Well, this has been recreated in the administrative state. If you think about it, Jason, it's millions of people. Millions of appointees that are never elected, that have massive budgets, and they're dedicated to those budgets. They're dedicated to their jobs. They will not give up an inch of power once they have it.
And so that is the problem.
Exactly what Dwight warned of. Yeah.
And again, you know, he warned not only against the government, but the institutions surrounding it. And he talked about it even being a spiritual battle with these people, warning of a scientific elite that could take over. Now, you fast forward to the COVID 1984 nightmare, and how much of trust the experts, trust the science did we hear? And a lot of these mechanisms were used in an authoritarian manner many could not believe. But you talked about kind of a precursor to that. You know, Homeland Security, et cetera, they had been for some time targeting American citizens. Now, it was not as outright. There was still this illusion and facade that it was Muslim terrorism that they were most worried about. But you saw that begin to change. Again, you mentioned the Tea Party as one example, but Homeland Security also had their fusion centers. They began to put out reports about militias, Ron Paul supporters, people that utilized the Gadsden flag. You fast forward to January 6th, and they're able to put people in prison for a non-insurrection, some of which, again, you can disagree with Tarrio's politics all you want. He wasn't even there. He wasn't in D.C. on the day of what happened, and he's going to be serving 20 years unless the court systems do something about that. And he's far from the only one that was wrongfully or overly prosecuted. So that system has been weaponized, and it is operational in this country right now, correct?
Yes, and well, the problem is, Jason, we see what I would call, you called it a spiritual thing. I think it is. It's an unholy alliance between the administrative state. Now, that is what you call the deep state, and particularly its law enforcement agencies, an alliance between them and the creator of the deep state, which was the Democratic Party. Those two are together. They defend each other. They grow together, right? And the media is right alongside to defend the two of them. It's a mutual defense alliance. It's also a mutual offense alliance. So when they want to go after Trump, they create lies, and then they disperse the lies through the media, And then the DOJ takes the lies and starts investigating through the FBI, which creates more investigations. It's an unholy alliance, and it's all about power. It's all about retaining wealth and retaining power. And it's in, I say it in the book, it's a matter of human nature. And it's been the demise of democracies before us.
Richard, we got to take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk Trump. I want to talk David Cameron. I want to talk NATO. And I want to talk about the aspect that you just pointed out, that they basically created a circle in which they have plausible deniability. Well, they reported on it, so we had to investigate it on it. They were investigating. So we had to give you a warrant. We got to take that break. We'll be back with more Richard Lyons after this. It is Today's News Talk.
Have you heard the news?
The news, the news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is the news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. U.S. officials, speaking anonymously, have informed Bloomberg of the anticipated Iranian retaliation against an Israeli airstrike on Tehran's consulate in Damascus within 24 to 48 hours. O.J. Simpson, the former football star and actor, who became notorious for being charged and later acquitted in the murders of his ex-wife Nicole Brown and her friend Ron Goldman, has passed away at the age of 76 after a battle with cancer.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on Today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
We are back with Richard Lyons. And before you came on the show in the first hour, I was talking about Trump and his interview with Leslie Stahl. And I don't know if you remember this interview, but it was the one where he looked at her and he said, "They spied on my campaign, Leslie." And she goes, "No, no, this is 60 Minutes, sir. There's no evidence they spied on your campaign." And there was all the evidence in the world. It had already been a proven fact that that had indeed taken place. Yet this media hack continually denied reality. Speak to that as it has become the norm. And I would argue this, it was really the norm prior to Trump, but you never had somebody in the position of Trump, AKA within the executive or even the executive in inner circle, in other words, the administration, that would challenge that narrative. And Trump broke the mold by challenging a ton of these narratives, and he became a target.
Yeah, and you're right. It existed before, but it used to be, Jason, that the country agreed on certain things. It used to agree on certain things. And one was the Constitution. And another was having respect for the opposing party. And that's gone the way of time. And when Ronald Reagan was president, he was insulted mightily, right? He was insulted about every day, about he was stupid, he was just an actor, all these sorts of things. But with Donald Trump, he couldn't even defend himself. He couldn't even say, "Wait a minute, take a look at the facts." They just ride right over him. They create lies and then have the lies investigated, creating multiple investigations and assign millions of dollars to find crimes that never were committed. He is the most innocent man ever investigated in American history.
You know, I'd love to disagree with you, but I can't. Listen, I get it. I think the guy is totally imperfect as far as the crimes that they've charged him with, whether it be in a criminal court or in these civil cases, they're utterly ridiculous. And look, I'm all for prosecuting war criminals. I've never seen it in my lifetime. And I can point to a lot of war crimes over via not only Bill Clinton, the Barack star, both Bushes, you name it. With Trump, he de-escalated a lot of the military conflicts. Again, not perfect by any means, but when we talk about NATO in particular and this new story out there of him discussing NATO with David Cameron, he's the only president, not only in my lifetime, that named the military-industrial complex by name, first since Eisenhower, I believe, saying it was real, but also questioning our participation in NATO at all. So why do you think Cameron met with him, and what is behind this? And are there certain sects now that think it's a foregone conclusion that Trump is going to retake the White House?
With regard to NATO, I think Trump just wants there to be some sort of parity and responsibility between Europe and America. America alone can't spend all of its treasure defending the whole earth. And meanwhile, Jason, I don't know that anybody recognizes it, but based on our paying for the defense of Europe, Europe has become more and more socialist. They don't require to have very successful economies because they don't have to pay 5% of their GDP for defense, right? So Trump is just asking them to take care of some of their defense. Now, I don't think that his language is sometimes appropriate. You never want to anger a friend or an ally, much as Joe Biden's doing with Israel these days. But I think Trump has a point and is trying to make his point as he does as a negotiator.
So why do you think he's meeting with Cameron, the former prime minister?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
You know, when I look at that and I look at like somebody like that's fine. But like Jamie Dimon now out there and talking about the Trump administration and saying, hey, obviously the economy was better under Trump. Obviously, a lot of his policies were common sense. You know, that shows me that there are certain people that are now conceding that it looks like this guy is going to be unstoppable on his way to 2024. I'm not so sure. You know, I look at 2020. And I look at how corrupt it was. I look at the fact that Trump could not have been in a larger position of power at the time to try and audit the election in any semblance or common sense fashion. And we were unable to do so. And I'm talking about not only Trump, but those that challenged via states' rights as well. And constantly you saw the courts coming out, not looking at the evidence and saying there's nothing here, saying we're not going to look at the evidence because you don't have standing. That is something, in my opinion, that may be the death blow of what was once left of our constitutional republic. If we can't audit the elections that are supposedly free and fair, how are we ever to know that they are in fact free and fair, Richard?
Well, Jason, and this goes to my book, The DNA of Democracy. I go with a microscope to the Constitution. And a lot of the public doesn't realize how much of the Constitution was devoted to voting. It is the keystone right we have to protect ourselves against an overreaching government. And we are very right to be worried about the election in 2024 for a number of reasons. And one is this mail-in balloting, the harvesting that they're able to do. States that don't have paper balloting, you have a very hard time auditing. With a paper ballot, you can audit and count all the ballots, and you can see if someone was actually a citizen or not. But as I heard last week, the number I heard last week was that 384,000 persons in the United States were registered to vote without showing an ID. They did not have to show any ID to get registered. So if you couple that with ballot harvesting, and you couple that with having no paper trails, it's a wash in corruption. With the Republican Party would have to spend so big, it would be beyond the cheating being done by the Democrats.
And that is alarming to me. And, you know, you didn't even mention the machines. You did mention paper ballots. But one of my big troubles is that these machines are under proprietary software. They are not auditable. And we just have to believe them. This isn't a right or left issue. This is something that I've been talking about since 2004 when they were largely instituted. We got about a minute left in the segment with you. What would you like to leave the audience with, and where can they get the books?
The books are available at richardclyons.com. They're available at Amazon. And thanks for asking, Jason. They're also per request at retail shops. And I would just, you know, if anyone is worried about their government, not enough people vote. So please go out and vote in November, and let's hope it counts. That's what I
Well, let's do more than hope. Let's try to get this thing with polls to show if they do steal it, that again, it's so in your face that somehow, some way, we can get some accountability in this country. We can start getting audits, and really we can repeal these systems of corruption and go back to one person, one vote,
one
physical ballot, one ID.
One ID.
And then a system of counting it. Guys, we don't need machines. We figured out how to do math as cavemen. They had the little notches there. I figured it out by fourth grade. I was pretty good at big numbers. I'm pretty sure we can do it human being style. Richard C. Lyons, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take one more break in the show, man. 2 hours flies by. Final segment with Dr. Merrill Nass after this.
Anticipate potential delays for the morning commute. In other news, a recent government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate mouth.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats. Spark sheer
athleticism. It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom.
Residential areas by...
And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Jason Burmis has the power of information.
Today's News Talk.
TNT.
And we are now joined by Dr. Merrill Nass. She's somebody who I have interviewed on my other program, so it is a pleasure to have her here. Dr. Nass, for those that don't know who you are, give us a bit of a background and explain why you're an expert in the field of biological warfare.
Well, I'm a physician, and 32 years ago, I published a paper after spending 3 years investigating Zimbabwe, then Rhodesia's anthrax epidemic, which is the largest that ever occurred that we know of in the world. And there were more than 10,000 human cases. There were only about 200 documented deaths. There are probably more deaths. But the people were catching it from the cows, and it had been used as a weapon of war to impoverish Black people in a race war, actually, where the Blacks and the whites were fighting for control of Rhodesia, which had been a British colony. After the rest of Africa had gotten independence and majority rule, Rhodesia had a coup, which gave the white minority rule of the country in 1965, and then there were skirmishes for the next 15 years until eventually there was a negotiated truce and Black majority were given majority rule. Anyway, so I studied that. I proved it was biological warfare. I was the only person in the world who had ever been able to take an epidemic and show scientifically that that is what had happened. The next year, I was invited to Cuba to study an odd epidemic of blindness and neuropathy that was affecting people's gait, their thinking, their hearing, and particularly their vision. And I independently, and there were other people also working independently, we all came up to this with the same conclusion around the same time, that it was due to cyanide. And that epidemic was able to be resolved by people, you know, they were consuming cyanide in either water or food. Probably were being poisoned, and vitamins and certain nutrients were able to detoxify the cyanide. You know, and So I did a lot of that work long ago, but I've been following the issue since then. I've consulted for the World Bank. I was considered an expert on the anthrax letters. I consulted for the Director of National Intelligence on the issue of biological warfare agents that might be created within the United States and how to detect them, prevent, you know, and deal with that problem. And I've been an advisor to the Government Accountability Office. So I think it's generally, at least not by my detractors, but by many people, that I know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm sure you have a lot of those detractors, because nobody likes people going against narratives that have been set by governments and nation states alike. But when you talk about anthrax in particular, you just mentioned the letters. And although a lot of people have short-term memories, that is probably how the United States is most, and the Western world, is most familiar with anthrax, those letters that were mailed out to media personalities and government officials alike right around 9/11. What did you find with those attacks?
A friend of mine was actually identified by the FBI incorrectly as the anthrax perpetrator, anthrax letters perpetrator, right after he committed suicide. That was Bruce Ivins. He was about the fifth or sixth person that the FBI had tried to pin this case on. You may remember Steve Hatfill was one, and he got a $5.8 million settlement from the FBI for being wrongly accused. I happen to think it was an inside job. There were lots of clues. There are an exuberant amount of clues that were designed to pin it on a variety of people. As I say, the FBI had five or six that they investigated. And when Ivins died, they claimed he was the perpetrator, but they never had any evidence. There were two sets of anthrax that were used in the letters. There were early letters, and that was a sort of roughly produced anthrax with contaminants. They never found the contaminants at Fort Detrick, where Ivins worked. They never found any of it in his car or in his home. The second set of letters was very, very clean, highly purified anthrax. It was impossible to produce that kind of anthrax at Fort Detrick. So it's not clear where it came from. But the General Accounting Office, and which is now the Government Accountability Office, as well as the National Academy of Sciences, both issued reports after the FBI claimed they solved the case, showing that they had not actually proved it.
And, you know, you mentioned Bruce Ivins and some information that would suggest it was an inside job. These letters were framed to look like they had come from Muslim extremists. They said things Correct. Like death to America, death to Israel, referenced 9/11, were very crude, like for they, in other words, they were not diatribes. They were not manifestos. They were very, very short and very concise, and gave that look and feel in a time where people were supposed to be very afraid. And I remember I was living in upstate New York. People were constantly looking at the water supplies and worried if they had been contaminated or if another attack had come, if there was powder here. There was quite a fear-mongering campaign surrounding that. However, that was dwarfed by the fear-mongering campaign via the COVID 1984 nightmare. And that kind of fast forwards us to where we are today. You've done a lot of research on COVID and quote unquote COVID misinformation. What is your belief surrounding the initial release of the virus? What is it? Is it zoonotic, or is it something that was created in a lab?
It was clearly created in a lab. I think anyone who disputes that has not looked at the genome. There are so many abnormal additions to that genome that could only have been added in a lab, that have deliberate pathologic properties that were known to scientists.
So when you say that, one of the things that really raised my eyebrows, now, initially, when all this started to pop off, I was very skeptical of a zoonotic virus. We'd had dry runs on this before. In other words, you had the fear mongering via H1N1 and the birdie flu and the piggy flu and the combination of that and WHO pandemic level 6 all the way back in like 2009, 2010. They were already then advocating for multiple shots, quarantines, masks, etc. It just didn't hit the crescendo that we saw here. When you talk about that genome, again, the thing that raised my eyebrow was the HIV component to that. Is that a reality? People talk about the furin cleavage site, the P3 protein, kind of like the gain of function access. Is that in this virus?
There were four, at least, very short, like, I don't know, 4 to 6 amino acids, I think, maybe less, segments that were identical to what's found in HIV. It's possible that those were not intended to be there, but it's also likely that they were and that they have some effect on the immune response. Now, that's not my area, and I can't tell you which it is. But those aside, the first day that Fauci had his phone call with the 12 virologists on February 1, 6 different regions of the genome were identified in that phone call that were abnormal, that had no business being in a coronavirus. And February 1, 2020, I mean, very 6. And subsequently, you know, more areas were identified like these, the HIV like segments. You know, that some of them may have been just be there by chance. You know, there's only 4, well, there's occasionally others, but generally there's just 4 nucleotides in RNA. So yeah, if you have a segment that's 4 in a row, it's 4 times 4 times 4 times 4 divided by 2 is the probability that you might find them by that segment by chance. So it's possible. But to find all of these segments there, that's, you know, then now you're talking 1 in a billion or 1 in a trillion.
And yet they still pushed the zoonotic virus. They still have yet to come clean, people like Fauci, Francis Collins, and others. However, we are seeing at least the steps of possibly some accountability within the U.S. government. It was just announced yesterday via Rand Paul that he's hopefully going to get some of the information regarding the meetings between Fauci and the Central Intelligence Agency. We've already had Fauci and Daszak testify behind closed doors. We've seen the paperwork. We don't know exactly what they've seen. Do you think that there is going to be any type of accountability as to what actually occurred with the virus?
Well, you mentioned 2 things there. First, you talked about Fauci meeting with the CIA, and then you talked about accountability. So I think, you know, looking into when Fauci met with the CIA is very worthwhile, and maybe we can find that out. Whether there's going to be accountability is a political question. It's probably not going to happen during the Biden administration. It might happen during a Trump administration. It's more likely to happen during a Bobby Kennedy administration. In terms of going to the CIA, well, who knew what when? I'll tell you what I do know, which is that Bill Gates spent $55 million on BioNTech stock at the beginning, or it may not have even been stock. It may have been some other form of investment in September of 2019. Okay, so he knew to invest in the company that made the first mRNA shots in September of 2019. In October of 2019, the health minister of France, Agnès Buzyn, knew to begin the process of taking hydroxychloroquine away from being an over-the-counter drug that anyone could just buy in a store without a prescription. And that process got completed in January. So I would say that Bill Gates knew something and Agnès Buzyn knew something early on that something was about to happen that would be involved with messenger RNA vaccines and hydroxychloroquine. Now, where did that information come from? I mean, I think those are people that need to be investigated. And find out, you know, on the other hand, would Bill Gates have been as that obvious to spend? It was the biggest investment that year. I saw it in the tax return. If you look at in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation tax return, it's $55 million for BioNTech in 2019. So would he have left that clue if he knew really what was going to happen? But maybe he had just a glimmer of information. Who knows? Somebody knew to buy BioNTech stock, and somebody knew to make it difficult to get hydroxychloroquine ahead of time. Now, some people say
that
knew to make it difficult to get hydroxychloroquine ahead of time. Now, some people
so
say
let's talk
that
about
they,
that. Let's talk about that aspect of trying to make things that would be safe and effective against this virus less likely to be used. And when they were utilized and used, things like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin C, vitamin D, they were immediately demonized. And those that would prescribe them, some of them actually lost their medical licenses, correct?
Including me. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that shows premeditation, right? I mean, on so many levels where you have cheap drugs that do work, then all of a sudden you don't have a novel virus that cannot be treated. Instead of treating people with these, they went to things like ventilators that had an 80%+ death rate. They utilized remdesivir, which was a drug that had really failed to work in what it was actually created for. And that was the policy until we had these hate and lie shots, the mRNA. And you just mentioned BioNTech, but mRNA has a large collaboration, in fact, a strategic collaboration with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, BARDA, DARPA, Institut Pasteur, AstraZeneca, Merck, all of these players. And when you get to Moderna, who's a part of this, Moderna actually partners with DARPA all the way back in 2013 for their initial mRNA program under the ADEPT and PROTECT program, which clearly states, yes, zoonotic viruses, but also biological warfare as well as a tool. My point is this. When you involve the military on any level, I feel like they don't have to tell you the truth. And when you see things being demonized and people gone after for trying to treat people effectively, and this is the only solution, we've got a big problem. And I don't know if we're ever going to get to the truth or accountability because of this militarized aspect.
Yeah. Well, I think what we've found is that no federal agencies are interested in telling us the truth anymore. They're in fact interested in controlling the truth and censoring us, because there were a dozen different federal agencies that were directing social media who and what to censor. You know, that came
out
of
the Missouri v. Biden. When you talk about the censorship there, that's a plausible deniability circle, right? You know, they can sit there and say, well, we're a private company, so we can do what we want, but you're literally getting orders from the government. But they're not orders, they're suggestions. So everybody kind of points in this circle. No, they're the ones that told us. We didn't force them. They could have done whatever they want. But when you really look at the big tech companies themselves, they're protected from being sued. That's the big game. And then if you try to get criminal accountability, well, here we are. We're in 2024. Maybe, sort of, kind of, we might get some criminal accountability, but I haven't seen it in my lifetime. So what is the solution?
What is the solution? I think it's a multifaceted solution. First of all, we don't know who's running the country. I mean, Catherine Austin Fitz has said that for years, and it took me a while to grasp it. But we really don't. I mean, obviously, Biden is not running the country. Have any presidents run the country? Is there always somebody behind the presidents? I think most likely there is. Are the elections fair? Do these electronic voting machines ever give us, you know, accurate counts? Probably not. Who's in control of them? That's a very good question. We've seen them hacked in courtrooms, and yet everyone pretends that that's not the case. Why is it that neither party wants paper ballots? Are both parties, you know, is this really a kabuki show between the two major parties, and there's really not a lot of difference between them, or are perhaps they controlled by the same entities? I mean, these are questions that are worth asking. But in terms of fixing things, I think that The corruption is very deeply embedded. I mean, we've seen during COVID that the FDA did not do any of the things it's required to do. We don't even know if the FDA was regulating the COVID vaccines or these other products under EUA. I mean, the EUA gave the FDA a cover. The FDA commissioner is the person who issues an EUA, emergency use authorization. And all that says is, we haven't checked out this product. It doesn't have a license. We're guessing that it's going to be more beneficial than it is harmful. That's the only standard. And so
the drugs don't have to work, period. Dr. Merrill Nass, we have run out of time. But again, that was another feature that they were selling you on via WikiLeaks documents in the H1N1. I was playing clips from myself a decade plus ago talking about that. They don't even have to give you stuff that works. And guys, newsflash, the COVID-1984 hate and lie shots, they didn't work for what they said. I think they were pretty effective for what they wanted. Dr. Merrill Nass, thank you so much for joining the show. And thank you guys for joining me over here on TNT Radio 5 nights a week, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, where the truth lives. Remember, it's not about left or right. It's always about right and wrong. And I'll see you on the flip side.